T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the time.
Well, hello and welcome to the 41st episode of the Being Brilliant radio show. This is your host, Amy Hackett-Jones, happiness and high performance coach and hypnotist for being brilliant in the way you both live and lead your life and those around you. You can find me at www.amyhackett.jones.com. The Being Brilliant radio show is a deep and impactful look at what it takes to be brilliant. The show invites you, our listeners, to step into the very essence of who you are being as you show up to life. My guests bring a combination of inspirational teachings coupled with practical tools and essential life and leadership skills translated into actionable strategies so that you, our listeners, may step into being the very best version of yourselves. My interviewees are high performers, thought leaders, game changers, pioneers, dreamers, adventurers, wayseers, visionaries, as well as friends and family. Those whom I believe live brilliantly and who travel magically through life, shining their own light so others may do the same. And of course, today I have somebody who shines brighter than just about anybody else I know. Her name is Debbie Lichter. And Debbie combines 20 years of experience in the health and fitness industry with her very own unique and fiercely compassionate approach to helping women break free from addiction, obsession, and self-sabotage. So, Debbie, welcome onto the show.
Oh, Amy, it is so wonderful to be here. Thank you so much.
It's such a pleasure, and I'm really, really so very glad that you accepted to be on the show, because what you have to share with the world is very unique and at the same time addresses so many people. Like, it's addiction is something that that is so rife in our society, and yet it's such a taboo and there's so much stigma around it, and it's just something that I really wanted to help shine a light on. And of course you are the person to do that. So Debbie, as a freedom from addiction expert and a congruency coach, and we're going to dive into what she means by that, Debbie also is an embodiment guide, and she worked for Cosmopolitan magazine internationally for several years and navigated her own path to freedom from food and drug addiction, codependency, and severe anxiety and self-doubt. And today she combines 20 years of experience, again, as I said, in the health and fitness industry with all of this. And it's just incredible the way she does it. I have experienced Debbie's work firsthand, and we'll go into that as well. And Debbie says her mission is to create a global constellation of leaders worldwide who are lit up, free from addictions, and going on to light others up as well. And just before we dive in, Debbie, this quote that you sent me, I absolutely love. It really just brought it all home. Debbie wrote to me and she said, "Living in denial that you have addictions is like living as the walking dead. After I got free, something ignited in me and I wouldn't go back if I could, and I couldn't go back if I would." I love that. "It's like the heaviness has left me, so there is nothing left to do but be light and brilliant." So, Debbie, welcome.
Oh, Amy, thank you so much. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to really speak into addiction and this conversation that I feel as a collective can have so much heaviness. Yes. and so much stigma attached to it, and so much perception of, oh, that's something I either have or I don't. And those people over there, you know, like a fringe population within our society, struggles with this.
Yes.
And it's sort of a have or have not, or yes, I have a family member who's got that thing. And really, as I dove more and more into what addiction really was in my own life, mm-hmm. and really got to work with more and more folks worldwide, I really got to see, gosh, you know, there is an underlying shadow aspect that is going on in the collective, and it goes on at varying degrees. And this aspect is an aspect of our inner disconnection or inner alienation, kind of like forgetting who we are. It's sort of the opposite of being brilliant. I find being brilliant is being all of you, right? And it's embracing all of yourself, and it's allowing yourself to shine wherever you are, and no matter, you know, what life circumstances are going on for you. And I find that addiction actually takes us in the opposite direction. And so what I really find is I have so much excitement and lightness about really, really helping people not only uncover and discover what addiction means for them, understanding the difference between like a bad habit versus an addiction, and really, really, truly understanding that so that they can understand what they need to actually do to address the addiction versus just, oh, I'm just going to do X, Y, or Z to address a bad habit. So that's something I'm very passionate about educating people on and helping them with. But also just that we can, as a collective, as a society, that we can really take the stigma off. We can stop seeing addiction as a disease that needs to be cured and something that is affecting a fringe population of society, and really see it as an aspect of the shadow that is showing up in the collective, and that it's not a disease to be cured. It's a shadow that needs to be integrated into the light.
Oh, I love that. And it's so true. And it reminds me of Marianne Williamson's quote that gets quoted all the time about, you know, shining your own light so others may do the same. And you absolutely embody that. So what I'd love to do is to take a dive into your life and your own journey and how you know, because you were a successful executive working internationally with Cosmopolitan magazine, you know, a dream job for so many, you know, young girls, young women. So just, you know, share with our audience, please, just a little bit about your journey and how you, you know, that aha moment you came to when you were able to start stepping out of the space that you were in.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Thank you so much for that question. You know, I feel like, and this is another big misconception about those of us who struggle with addiction or who are aware that we struggle with addiction, although I didn't know for many years. I was in total denial. I thought I had everything under control.
Yeah.
But my life looked pretty good on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
I had graduated UCLA, summa cum laude, like you mentioned. I went to go work for Cosmo, you know, creating campaigns for Estee Lauder and Tommy Hilfiger. You know, things looked really good on the outside. And then I felt this deep desire to really do something that was more integrated, body, mind. I started doing Pilates while I was working overseas, and that became a passion of mine. And I thought, I'm going to come back to the States. I want to become a Pilates teacher. And I did that. And so I worked my way up, and I was an expert in the health and fitness world, and what looked really good on the outside, was a Pilates expert and able to help everyone. And Amy, I felt like a complete fraud.
Oh, I love that you say that. Yes, carry on. I'm going to come back to this. Oh my God, yes.
I felt like a complete fraud because I knew that behind closed doors, I was obsessed about food. I was restricting during the day and drinking coffee and like having, you know, taking stimulants and various things to try to be more on and be more productive and be more of what I thought other people needed me to be. I would then come home at night totally exhausted and depleted. I would then start eating. And then once I started, I wouldn't want to stop. And I'd eat way beyond my satiation point, and I'd feel bloated and gross. And so I was in this very, very, you know, restrict binge diet obsession place with food. I was using sleeping pills, diet pills, drugs, anything that would allow me to control when I was awake, when I was asleep. I felt like I needed to have control over everything because I felt so out of control on the inside. I was constantly anxious, and I never felt like I could just be present. It always felt like there was something just like this underlying tension and not okayness where I had to be very, very alert and thinking 5, 10, 15, 20 steps ahead of me. There was no just,
oh,
I can just be here right now. And my lies had lies on top of them. I was lying to myself. I was in so many layers of delusion. So I had this, you know, what felt then like a stage character on the outside, when inside I felt empty, I felt lonely, I was anxious, and I didn't know what to do, because I was the expert. I was the one that other people came to for their health and their wellness and their well-being. And I had all the information and all the nutrition knowledge and had done inner work and had been to therapy and had self-help books at home. And like, I had done all this stuff. And so I didn't know what my problem was. And what really had to happen for me, you know, it really wasn't until I got to an inner place, not that my outside world was falling apart, but that I got to that internal place where the pain of being so incongruent inside of myself, of being so inauthentic, of being so empty and trying to keep it together on the outside, it became so painful that I finally just had to just completely unravel. And I did. I remember I was sitting in my car one day and I just hit that place. I hit that place of just, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I remember a moment where I just felt, it can't get any worse than this. And it was that realization was something I never let myself do before, because I thought that I had it together, and I never let myself actually just drop into what was really happening underneath that. And underneath that, I was lonely, I was depressed, and I didn't know what to do with myself. Right. And I finally let myself go there. And it was a sad, sad moment in that moment. But what got to happen, it's so funny, I'm looking at my clock, it's 11:11 over here.
Oh, I love it.
I know, because literally that was my 11:11 moment, because in that moment, what I heard was, if it can't get any worse than this, it can only get better from here.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
And something shifted for me in that moment, and I didn't know what that meant. But what it did, Aim, is that it allowed me to go from thinking that I knew everything and trying to do it my way, to finally saying, okay, I don't know. And I'm just open. I'm just open. And that openness became really the first step for me in being able to actually access the resources, the mentor, the insight, the wisdom, and the experience that I needed to have within myself, that allowed me to start to navigate a new way of living and being that was actually deeply, deeply authentic and congruent. And really, that really shaped how I am and who I really am today.
Wow. What you've just shared there is, I mean, absolutely incredible. It's such a, from the I don't know and being willing to say and be honest with yourself that you just don't know, you just don't have the answers. And to breathe then into this space of control and lack thereof. This is something I want to come back to as well, because I often find people think that if they think that they're in control, then everything will be okay. Yeah. And it's like, what are we actually trying to control? What is it that is so out of control that it needs controlling?
Exactly. And what I really love about this conversation of control is that for a long time, this was me as well, and this is what I see with a lot of the folks that I work with, is that we feel at a level of out of control sometimes. Mm. And so we assume that the opposite of out of control is control. I need to have control. But when we look at control, control gives us the illusion that, oh, because I ask people this, well, what do you feel like control is going to do for you? Well, I'm going to be able to relax, and I'm going to be able to just take it easy and just have everything figured out, and things are going to be more simple, and things are just going to be under control. And And that's not how control works, right? Control
right.
works. The more I try to control, the more I try to grip onto something, the more rigid I become, the more rules I have, the smaller my world comes, the more complication mm-hmm. I have, because I need things to be a certain way for me to feel like I have them under control. The more I'm having to project myself into future tripping about what may or may not happen so that I can try to control the future. And that creates a whole experience of not being able to be in ourselves. It's a whole experience of incongruence. And so what I really realized is that the opposite of control is not out of control. The opposite of control is trust and allowing.
Oh, I love that you just said that. So I have a client that I was speaking to earlier today, and the control issue came up, and I questioned it and put that, you know, put it to her as you have just done, and it literally just turned her entire world around.
And I love that.
Yes, because it's just, we have the, like you say, we have this illusion of control that when we have everything under control in our warped perceived perception of what control is, then everything will be okay. And it's like, no, be okay first. And then everything will fall into line. Everything, you know, you'll step into flow and you'll never have to control anything again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the biggest thing. I mean, that's the biggest thing when I'm working with people, because I'll hear that all the time is, well, I just want to get this addiction under control, or sometimes people mm-hmm. aren't even sure if it's an actual addiction, but they might just feel like it's an obsession or a self-sabotaging pattern, and they just want to get it under control, and they just mm-hmm. want to be done with it. I speak with a lot of high-achieving people, a lot of leaders, a lot of people who, you know, have... They have a lot of tools and a lot of resources, and they have almost an irritation or just a intolerance. I just want to yes. get this thing under control.
Yes.
And it's such a beautiful access point, because when we can have the humility to be open to navigating a path of what does it look like to not need to have control. And I have tremendous respect for people who are willing to admit that they don't know.
Yeah.
And be willing to allow themselves to unravel to the place where they're at a foundational, you know, it's beautiful if you just think about the root word humble. It really means ground. And I think sometimes we can take that word humble and we can take it in the direction of humiliation, which is not what humble means. Humble is, can I really just be honest, and can I just be real with what is right now, and allow that to be a foundation from which I can grow congruently, authentically, really, truly getting to know the real me, so that whatever construct I've created that is leading me to believe that I need to be able to see around corners and project five steps ahead in order to feel safe, that instead I can actually feel safe inside of myself regardless of what happens in life, because I know that I'm guided and protected and being taken care of. That is called trust and allowing.
Yeah. And that's just epic when people can step into that space from the framework of control,
mm-hmm.
and then step into that space of freedom. I wanted to come back and sort of circle back around to this. I just love the whole circular movement of everything. but I wanted you to dive deeper into the sort of the essence of addiction. Because I feel you really have a strong grasp on this. And I know that whilst, you know, you've typically worked with women on addiction to food, really it's the same essence underlying, you know, the core essence underlying each addiction, whether it's alcohol, drugs, food, over-exercising, or whatever else it may be. And I was just wondering if you could share what, in from your perspective and your experience working with so many people and having gone through this yourself,
mm-hmm.
What really is the underlying essence of addiction?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, what I really find is that most folks are seeing addiction as either a disease of the mind or a disease of the body. and or a combination of the two. And so there's a million neuroscientists out there that are talking about this thing and that thing, and there's a lot of discussion around what it is. And depending on what book you read, we can just throw ourselves into the intellectual understanding of what addiction is and the analysis of it and how we fix it. And I feel like something can be missing there sometimes, where there's a palpable experience of addiction. And what I really see is that it's not so much a disease as it is a dis-ease.
Yeah.
Really a separation from ease, a separation from comfort that affects us not just body or mind in a very sort of like small specific way, but really that it's a dis-ease that affects us in body, mind, and spirit. And this part of the spirit is oftentimes very much overlooked, and then very much misunderstood in the ways of the body and the mind as well. And so that's a huge part that I really love to help people get some more clarity on. And what I'll say here is that, you know, just circling back to, since we are going in all these circular fashions, when I spoke earlier about the difference between a bad habit versus an addiction, a bad habit is something that can be changed through mindset and lifestyle shifts.
Yeah.
And by simply implementing a good habit. And so this can happen, and it can happen across the board. And I think that where a lot of us can get a little bit confused is when we are taking a look at addiction, thinking that it's a bad habit, and then trying to use mindset shift, as in, I'm just going to think my way through this. I'm just going to think positive. I'm just going to not put any mental energy into this because I want to focus on what I want and not put any energy into what I don't want. And if we just knew anything about that, what we resist persists. And so it just doesn't work that way. The shadow's like, oh, that's fun. I'm just going to grow even bigger. But so many times we can do that, or we just have this mental sort of willpower thing, and we're trying to, like we talked about earlier, we're trying to gain control. Or we talk about lifestyle shift. Okay, well, I'm just going to start that new diet, that new exercise routine. I'm just going to, we just not have any junk food in the house, or I'm just going to not go here, or I'm only going to go here, or I'm only going to go here on Tuesdays, or I'm not going to hang out with those people. And, you know, and all of these lifestyle shifts can absolutely help. But when we're dealing with addiction, what I've really seen is that we have to address the underlying body, mind, and spirit challenges that are affecting us at a deeper level. And that's the stuff that's blocking us on the inside. And so when I see this, I really see that we are all, and I say this, and maybe there's somebody listening to this saying, well, I don't experience this at all in any capacity. And I'm saying, well, that's fantastic. I want to talk to you and interview you then.
Yes.
You're fascinating to me. But when I say we all, it's because I this is stuff that is showing up. If there's something that's showing up in one person, you know, then it's an aspect of the collective, right? And so even if it's just a tiny, tiny little sliver, there's an aspect to which we, on the collective level and possibly for ourselves internally, have gotten disconnected from our own bodies, from our own selves, like forgotten who we are at a very deep, deep level, almost this inner alienation. And we might see that by being constantly up in our heads, by being obsessed, by being overwhelmed, by feeling like we're it's hard for us to be present. We're busy all the time. Everybody's busy all the time. And we just have, we're sort of these floating heads oftentimes on top of bodies. And there's a disconnect there, or a disembodiment, or just an alienation. And what that can set off for us is the feeling of being alone, and that feeling of anxiety as well. And so I really see that happening a lot. And then there's this aspect of the of the mental dis-ease or separation from ease that I really see showing up as, it can show up many ways in the addiction way, but on the collective, there's this almost like forgetting who we, like a disassociation. We don't know who we are, and we're so caught up in who we're trying to be out in the world and our image and the way that people receive us or perceive us, and we're sort of living outside of ourselves. And then we have this deep level of lack of inner trust and that inner connection with ourselves. And so there's an aspect to which our minds are also, you know, not fully remembering who we are and aligning with that truest part of us.
Mm.
And then on the spiritual level, this is where I really see this disconnection showing up a lot. And the disconnection might be from between you and the world around you, or you and a feeling of connection to source, universe, God, a power mm-hmm. greater than yourself, whatever that thing is, that larger feeling that oftentimes I see that folks might have a belief in spiritual terms or concepts, or yes, I believe that there's sort of a universal wisdom out there.
Yep.
But a lot of us are missing access. We're missing that direct, intimate connection of, oh, but I am feeling that working in my life. I feel like I can just take a deep breath. I don't have to worry. I don't have to stress. I don't have to one-up you. I don't have to make sure I'm getting mine. I don't have to be in a lack or fear conversation, because I know that I am being supported and guided at the highest levels and the greatest depths. And that disconnection that can show up, it can show up in the way of just being irritable or mm-hmm. angry or resentful or just not feeling okay and never knowing why. Having that level of going around and there's just an impatience or just a restlessness mm-hmm. or you're just not happy. And it just feels like there's this inner, like you want to scream, you want to like, there's that like frustration happening inside of you, and you don't even really know why, but it's just sort of, it's like your skin's been turned on inside out. And, you know, I call it this spiritual inflammation. You know, we talk about chronic inflammation, chronic pain and chronic inflammation, which I used to have tons of in my body. I think it's all related.
Yes, the body never lies.
Our body never lies, and so that feeling of chronic inflammation, there's a heat inside of you, an irritation inside of you that can be very, very uncomfortable and can actually lead to you not feeling comfortable physically. But what I find is that discomfort, that dis-ease can be happening for us on a spiritual level as well. And as long as that discomfort and dis-ease is happening for us on a spiritual level, it's always going to take us to some kind of mental lapse in judgment or justification or rationalization that I can, it's okay. I'm just going to do this one time, or I deserve it.
That's a classic.
These are the big ones that I hear. I deserve it. I want what I want. Or I don't care. I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some other kind of justification or rationalization. Or we don't even think, right? We just sort of compulsively will go do something and then find ourselves doing it and saying, oh gosh, how did I get in this pattern again? I really mm-hmm. didn't want to do this, but I'm just doing it. So there's some, it's like this sort of mental thing that happens. And that will take us to whatever the behavior is. And it's not always a substance either. It's not just, you know, food or alcohol or drugs or something like that. Sometimes it's just, it's creating chaos. It's control. It's fixing, it's obsessing. It's addiction to our image and looking good. It's people pleasing. It's, you know, it can show up. It's addiction to suffering, but we will go back into whatever that pattern is. And then once we start, this is what's very, very, important to understand about when something's an addiction, is that two things are present then. When there's something on the physical level, is that once you start, you don't want to stop. You don't want to, something, it's, like the feeling that I would have, and when people tell me that something else takes over,
yeah,
and you weren't intending to have more than one of whatever the thing is, you weren't intending to fully engage with that unhealthy relationship, but once you start, you kind of can't stop. Or once you have that one drink, you just want a second one. Or once you have that one chip, you just want more. Whatever it is, it's just sort of, we want more of it. And so that's either that's present, or that you can't stay stopped, meaning that you go back to it. So even though you say, I know what happens when I do this, every time I start eating the gummy bears or the ice cream or whatever it is, you know, every time I start having that chocolate, I end up just, I can't get it out of my mind. I'm thinking about it all the time, and I go back to it, and I go back to it until it's all gone. Or I don't want to be doing this behavior anymore. I'm done. I'm Xing this person off of Facebook. I'm Xing them out of my life. I'm taking them out of my phone. And then I get a text next week. And then that dopamine hit comes.
Yes, like, oh, the dopamine hit.
And I come back into it. And then I'm back in it again. You know, then it feels good again. How did I get here? And so it's the going back to it, right? So that's the one aspect on the physical. There's the mental of just this lapse of judgment that we have. And then I really see that as all stemming from this deeper sort of spiritual inflammation that's happening for us. And so when we can see it in these terms, Aim, like, we really get to see it not from the perspective of the stigma of something that needs to be cured, but really, how can we as a collective and as an individual come into deeper levels of connection with ourselves, alignment with who we really, really are, and coming back into our bodies so that we can be present, we can be connected, we can be connected to the people who we're with, we can be connected in our bodies, and we can actually feel and enjoy and be present for this incredible life that we have for us.
And I love that as a question to hold and be with and investigate. And I want to dive into that again in detail in a moment. And what you were just describing as the spiritual inflammation and the always somehow returning to the crutch, whatever that crutch is, whether it's chocolate or drugs or whatever. It's like, I remember when we first talked and when I shared with you about addiction, I sort of didn't really feel like I related a lot to the food thing and things like that. So I was like, oh, you know, but what I realized having, and I'm sharing this openly because it's all about authenticity, mm-hmm. right? What yeah. I realized was that I had, in a sense, like an addiction to my smallness, to not believing I was good enough, to you know, and I've, as a coach, I've been through this a million times. I've had coaches, you know, walk me through it and talk me through it and all the rest of it. And somehow it was just still there, still kind of niggling away. And so whenever I wanted to get up and speak out, I would do it. I'd go up and do a TED talk, or I'd go up and do this. But I always came back to shrinking into the smallness. And I realized that it was, in a sense, a sense of like a crutch for me to be small rather than to stand out and shine my light. And I remember one phrase that we came up with was kind of like, I just felt like I was comfortably numb. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is, you know, when people circle back to whatever the crutch is, it is that sense of being numb. And I really feel like on a global scale now, people are numb to being present, to being the light that they have inside, to shining that light, to stepping out and to doing bigger and better things and being more present and being brilliant. And it's, I just wanted you to talk more about that numbness just a little bit more, because I really feel that that's something that is so present.
Yes, absolutely.
Before we move absolutely. On any further.
Yes, and I want to just acknowledge you, Amy, for sharing that, because I really see you. You know, what I feel being brilliant really means is embracing all of you, is being yeah, all of you, absolutely. And do we have the courage to be all of us? And I'm going to answer your question in a moment, but I just want to speak into this for one moment. I find that when I speak with folks, so often they say, I say, well, what do you want? Well, I want to be confident. And sometimes the word confident can be a little bit overrated. I think that there is something that we're wanting that is deeper than that.
Mm.
And what I realized, and what you've just embodied and reflected just now,
mm-hmm.
is that the power of being courageous,
yes,
far outweighs the confidence that it takes to, just like you said, it takes a level of confidence to stand up and to do a TED talk.
Yes.
But do I have the courage to be all of me?
Yeah.
And that is a deeper, if the person who has the courage to be all of them, that is the person that I want to listen to.
Yeah.
And so just thank you for just reflecting that in this moment. And this just being a full circle moment,
mm-hmm.
where I get to witness you in being brilliant and embracing all of yourself and really taking, you know, because this is the thing about, and this is why I love teaching about congruence, which we can, you know, go into in a
yes.
moment. But what I love about teaching about and helping people to become more congruent is that oftentimes we think that congruence means, oh, I'm doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm.
When really congruence is, can I actually embrace all of who I am, and can I share me authentically with the world?
Mm.
Can I have enough of me inside? Can I be in agreement inside of me, my head, my heart, my gut, all in agreement and on the same team inside of me, not saying, you know, my gut knowing that I want to go do something, my heart saying, well, gosh, you know, what if you, like, you know, I want to do this, but what if you get hurt? And then my head saying, oh, heck no, I'm not going to go do that. Look how stupid I'm going to look. They're going to judge me. No way.
Yes. And oh,
we
my
have
God.
We have this inner incongruence or inconsistency inside of us. And then that is reflected. That's how I was earlier when I was sharing earlier about my experience, was that there was an inconsistency inside of me that was then being reflected on my inconsistency with how I was being with the world around me.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just creates more layers of numbness, actually.
Yes. And more about the fraud sense, you know, the imposter syndrome of, on the outside,
yes.
I felt that everyone, you know, everyone thought that my life was shiny and this, that, and the other, even though when I was at home taking care of mom until she passed away and all this sort of thing. And yet on the inside, I still felt comfortably numb. It was just sort of, yeah, you know, ambling along and shining my light whenever I could, but just regressing back into that comfortably numb space.
Yes. Yes. And here's what's interesting about the word. So the word comfort, I find so interesting
yes.
too, because I don't even call it a comfort zone anymore.
No.
I call it a familiarity zone, because I don't find it comfortable at all
yeah.
to be in a place where you know that you are dousing your own light, where you know that you are packing your big supernova self into a small little compartment
yeah.
inside of yourself. It is actually so uncomfortable being bound like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what we are numbing ourselves from is that discomfort. And so that's where addiction comes in. Addiction, we could equate the word, or we could exchange the word addiction for chaos.
Yes.
The reason why I'm using that is because chaos is anything that I do to distract, deny, scramble the message, jam my circuit, whatever I can do so that I don't have to actually be with the discomfort of the fact that I am not being the person that I know I'm here to be.
Yeah.
And that's where addiction comes in. So addiction is a solution. It's not the problem. Addiction says, well, I'm not ready yet to have a look at the fact that I'm not being who I want to be, and I'm not ready to do anything about it yet because of my attachments to who I think I am, because of my my unhealthy or codependent relationships, right? Because if I empower myself, then how is that going to impact some of my relationships where they are expecting me to be a certain way for me to, and that allows me to feel needed, and that allows me to feel loved and valued. And so I don't know if I want to be empowered. We have all these layers around that conversation. And so addiction allows us to escape all of that or to simply numb out from it. And even if the addiction itself is something that feels uncomfortable, because I've had folks say to me, well, why would I be addicted to obsessing or addicted to suffering? That doesn't even feel good. So why would I do that? That doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I say yes. But when you get distracted in obsession, or you get distracted by how much you're suffering, you don't have to deal with the deeper pain that's going on underneath that.
Yeah.
And so it becomes your place of ease and escape, even if it doesn't feel comfortable.
Yep.
Yeah.
Amazing. Debbie, thank you so much already. I just want to share that if anybody is listening out there on this new platform, this is the first time we're doing a show on this new platform, if you would like to ask Debbie a question, you can go to the chat option on the page, which is www.bit.ly/BE-brilliant. And yes, if anybody is there and wanting to type in a question, then please feel free. And this is Debbie Lichter on the line with me, Amy Hackett-Jones. Debbie, please share just for a moment your contact details, your website, etc., so that people can follow you and reach out to you if need be.
Yes. So there are a few access points, I guess.
Sure.
you can contact me on any of them, even if you are saying, well, gosh, I don't know if that's my thing, but I want to get in touch with you, then just do this. So I have a website, freefromfoodaddiction.com.
Mm-hmm.
Freefromfoodaddiction.com. And then I actually have, And somebody can go there. I've got some resources on there. I've got plenty of free resources. I also have a free from food addiction self-assessment that somebody can take. And the self-assessment can really serve you not just with your relationship with food, but if you're really wanting to have an assessment around how you're showing up with any addiction in your life, the self-assessment will really support you in that. So freefromfoodaddiction.com.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I have available for folks is the Congruence Code free training. And we haven't gone into the Congruence Code a whole lot here.
No, we're going to dive into that in just a minute. I just wanted to share your details.
Yes. Okay, good. Because I want to share a little bit about that to just create some context for why I'm really excited about just extending this to people as a resource for them.
Sure.
Yeah, so that, and then you can always find me on Facebook at debbie.lichter.1. And those two places are the best places to find me. There's LinkedIn, there's Instagram, there's plenty of things, but I'll just start with those two.
Fantastic. So I'd like you to talk about the Congruence Code in just a moment. I just want to come back to one point that you mentioned, and that is access. Because where I remember, I signed up to Debbie's course last year, and it's a 6-month program, and just such a deep dive into our inner workings and thinking and being and everything is absolutely fantastic. So I highly recommend it to anybody. Mm-hmm. And I remember when you talked about access in one of the modules, and I just thought this was absolutely brilliant. It really helped me separate the thinking patterns that I was in to stepping outside of that. So can you share a little bit about that before we dive into the Congruence Code?
Absolutely. Yeah. This experience of having belief. And when I say belief, and this was what was going on in my life as well. And this is what I encounter with so many people who I talk to, is that we have these very general spiritual beliefs about spirit, about the universe, these sort of slogans that we be the change and, mm-hmm. you know, things that feel good, or the actually the Nelson Mandela quote that Marianne Williamson is always so famous for. But yes, I mean, but yes, that. And so we sort of, we read these things and we get these snippets and we say, yes, that's it. And then why is that not happening in my life?
Yeah.
I believe I can go to an Esther Hicks conference, and I believe what they're saying, and I believe that the law of attraction, and I believe that the universe wants to gift me and is guiding me, and I believe these things, and yet why is it not showing up in my life? And what I got to see is that what happens inside of us is that we have these places that are rejecting, judging, pushing away, resisting against, fighting against that very power or source or energy or wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And what really was revealed to me was that we have the energy centers in our body. There's actually areas of our physical body and our energy body and our spiritual body that are playing out certain kinds of themes. And so at every single stage, there is this way that we are in resistance around what is. We're trying to walk around with what we think we know, and we're not open to being, you know, to what mm-hmm. we don't know. And so we cut ourselves off from possibility. And a lot of us are walking around, like you mentioned earlier, with a sense of lack of worth, lack yeah. of value. And then the way that that puts us into the world, feeling this very interesting combination of victimized and entitled at the same time. And so, and it's all happening very, very subtly, very, mm-hmm. very subtly.
Yep.
But it can come out in these little moments of, well, I want what I want, and so I'm going to eat that, or I want what I want, and so I'm going to do that thing over there, and screw this. And, you know, we can kind of have our little tantrums in these little ways. But that can happen. And then there's this aspect to which we are blocked from our own inner guidance, and we don't trust ourselves. We don't trust ourselves to make healthy choices. Mm-hmm. And what that does, it takes us down two paths. It takes us down the path of either trying to control everything, because we think that if we can control it, then we'll be able to feel more at ease. And so we go either that path, or we go the path of projecting our need to feel okay, to be okay, into the outside world, and really giving other people, you know, putting our sense of value and worth out there in the world, so that the accolades or the attention or the feedback or the perception or the opinion or the way that I look or the way that you like me now informs my inner concept. And so this is another way that we live. I call it being in the external feedback loop. We live outside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are some of the ways that we can be blocked from access as well. And then another way that we can be blocked from access is just what's weighing heavy on our hearts. When we experience where the resentment lives, the blame against ourselves, the blame against others, the shame, the fear, the stuff that's really just weighing us down. And I speak with people, and they say, I feel weighted down. When I ask folks, even people who want to get more freedom around their relationship with food, when we really get down to it, I say, what do you really, really want?
Mm.
And Amy, they want to be, it's not just the weight. They want to be lighter.
Yes.
And so when we want to be lighter, what are we really, really wanting? We're wanting that heaviness that is weighing so heavy on us, that's weighing us down, that's creating a heavy heart, right? I'll think mm-hmm. of all these terms that we use in our, you know, in our culture. Stuff that's weighing me down, I've got a heavy heart. And so that's a big, huge place that we are blocked from access. And when I speak to people, they say, I know that I'm supposed to love myself. I know I'm supposed to accept and love myself, but I just don't. And mm-hmm. so we're trying to manufacture the experience of self-love, knowing that we're supposed to, but all that does is make it a head game, and we're not actually able to experience that. And I believe it's because we have this access issue going on there. And then one of the biggest access blocks that we have is happening in our in the ways that we are not speaking up, that we are not being authentic, the way that we are withholding, stuffing or swallowing our truth, swallowing our feelings, not honoring our feelings, saying yes and not really meaning it, not honoring our own no, not really taking care of ourselves in a way that allows us to actually honor other people.
Yes.
And so there's this way that we are really, really blocked in our throats. We're either straight up lying, which is me, I used to lie all the time, or we're in delusion or withholding or just not being ourselves or being inauthentic. And so these are some of the ways that we can really be blocked from that access. And then, of course, there's what's going on in our heads. If we are feeding ourselves negative beliefs and we're constantly seeing the world through the lens of our limitations, through the lens of the shadow saboteur archetype inside of us, through the lens of the shadow victim, then it's very, very difficult for us to truly, truly see who we are. And so these are just some of the ways that I really see access can be blocked inside of ourselves. And if you can imagine that all that's happening inside of us, or even if one of those things is happening inside of us, we're playing energetic pinball with the universe. The universe is saying, I want to gift and give you all these gifts and stuff. And we're saying, yep, nope, I'm not worth it. Yep, no, I don't trust that. I can't honor myself, so I can't honor you. Nope, I've got this over here. I've got this agenda over here. And so when what happens is that we're trying to gain control, we're trying to manage our lives, we're trying to figure things out. That's one of my favorite terms in the entire world. I think it's funny. I always say, what are you trying to figure out? Stop trying to figure it out. The moment you say I'm trying to figure it out, you already know that you are in a control pattern. But it's too funny because we have these terms, but we're pushing that away. And so it is the path to come back into access starts with honesty. It starts with humility. It starts with not knowing, because we can't have a new experience if we already know the answer.
Yes, I love that. And just before because I know the time is cutting short.
Yes.
How can we have a new experience if we already know the answer? I remember you sharing one of your main prayers to the universe, to God, whatever it is that people like to call it. And it's about, literally, if you don't mind me sharing this, the first section of it, it's you got us to say regularly, like two or three times a day, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. And that just encapsulates exactly what you've just said. Please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. And I remember doing that, and it was just incredible, because we think we know everything. We think we're in control, and we think, you know, it's like, well, what if you could just sit with not knowing? And question and be in awe and wonder instead, and just kind of like, I don't know, I haven't got this. It's not all in my planned out. But actually, ironically, it is from the universe's perspective. We just need to step out of the way and actually allow flow to happen.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Absolutely. Yes.
So please do share about the congruency code. Can't wait to hear more about this.
Oh, yes. Well, really, the congruence code is the process of coming back into that access, coming back into alignment inside of ourselves, so that we can receive the gifts and guidance of the universe, and so that we can actually show up and be all of us, all of ourselves, be authentic. And so there are these seven access points inside of us that once we come into a agreement or congruency within that, and again, I'll just define what congruence is just because.
Yep.
So congruence is coming into agreement inside of yourself, where your head, your heart, and your gut are all on the same page. They're all on the same team, on the same page. So it's coming into agreement inside of yourself, and it's also coming into agreement between yourself and the world around you. Not meaning that you're going to always agree with everything that's happening around you, but that you are being authentic with the world. You are being you because you're connected inside of yourself. You have remembered yourself. You have returned to an aligned place of being, and you have resourced. Instead of outsourcing all of your power to other people, you have resourced your power. And from that place, you are then able to engage with the world from a place of being fully filled up. And I call that intersourcing. Now I get to intersource. As I stay filled and grounded and connected, then I'm able to share my gifts with the universe as I continue to receive those gifts into myself. And so it becomes this very symbiotic relationship of, as I share my gifts and my light, the gifts and the light from the universe will come back into me and will fill me, and it becomes very generative and life-affirming. And that's why I truly believe that if we want to see addiction heal on behalf of, on the collective, that there is an opportunity for each one of us in our own way to come into deeper levels of congruence, to come into deeper levels of that inner alignment, to really get free from those inner things inside that are blocking us, that are creating some disturbance, that are preventing us from fully being ourselves, fully being present in this life, fully trusting ourselves, fully being authentic and sharing our hearts with others, that we can each do that. And when we do that, that is when we will see the collective shift.
And that, you know, when we get that alignment of body, mind, sorry, of mind, heart, and gut, that's for me, is like when I'm in that space, that's when I'm completely at peace. That's when I can be completely present. I can listen deeply and intently to whoever is around me, and they know that they feel being listened to and feel being heard. And that, from a leadership perspective, is something that's just so missing on the planet, is presence and hearing people.
And 100%. I think
that's such a gift to be able to give somebody, is to turn off all of your stuff and to be 100% present to them. And that's, you know, you embody that in the work that you do. So I honor you for that.
Aw, thank you.
So given that this is the Being Brilliant radio show, what three tips would you like our listeners to go away with today in terms of what being brilliant is for you?
I would say the first thing is really to, well, I sense that a lot of us don't take risks or do something courageous because we fear failure. And we fear looking bad, we fear looking stupid. And so I am a huge advocate of really reframing the fail. And to be brilliant means to do something, not for what the outcome's going to be, but for who you get to be on the other side of doing that thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge thing that I love to support people around, is just really reframing that. Another one is to cultivate an access point for folks to cultivate deeper levels of inner trust, because I really see inner trust. I have a whole teaching on the inner guidance system. That's a combination of our gut instinct, our sixth sense intuition, and our divine inspiration. And that piece of connecting into our bodies and bringing our awareness down into our bodies. And just because we have only a couple minutes left, I'll just say one of the best ways to start connecting into your body is to actually just feel your feet on the ground. It's humble, but it will just take you out of your head in one moment. Just feel yourself here, right now. And what's beautiful is that the more you connect into your body and start to see your body as an access point for your empowerment, for your alignment, for your deepest expression of who you're here to be in the world, you will start, your body will start to speak to you and guide you in a way that you can actually listen to your body, and your gut will tell you yes, no, maybe, do it next week. You know, you will start to get, hear that level of nuance that you didn't even know was possible. And the last tool that has really helped me that I would just encourage others to do is just something I call the shitty first rough draft. It's just do the thing. Just do the thing. In fact, the Congruence Code lecture series that I'm actually doing right now is exactly that. I just got a hit on a Wednesday that said, you need to do this. And I didn't have it all figured out. I said that very, very intentionally. I did not have it all figured out. And I said, you know what though? You've got an inspiration to do this and you're just going to do it. Even if it's not perfect, even mm-hmm. if there's one person showing up on this, even if nobody's showing up for this, I've got to do this because this is the congruent expression for my spirit. And so I did, and it's this amazing thing now, and more than one person came, and you know, it's really special. But I would just say to really challenge that inner perfectionist and mm-hmm. let yourself have that shitty first rough draft.
I love it. Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much. That's absolutely brilliant. So again, this was Amy Hackett-Jones of the Being Brilliant Radio Show, episode number 41 with Debbie Lichter. You can find Debbie at www.freefromfoodaddiction.com, and she has a free training at congruencecodefreetraining.com. You can find her on Facebook as well at facebook.com/Debbie.Lichter, LICHTER, .1. And again on Instagram and where else? LinkedIn, Twitter.
Yes, all the usual places,
All of the
yes.
above.
I really, really encourage people, if they want to know more about the Congruence Code stuff, to really check out that free training.
Sure.
It is a standalone training in and of itself, and it also serves as an introduction to the lecture series that is happening right now. Mm-hmm. And so if there's going to be an opportunity for you to connect directly with me if you want to, and you can learn more about that, I would love to connect more.
Fantastic. Oh, Debbie, this has just been amazing. And I knew right from the beginning we could probably spend 2 or 3 hours just talking about this stuff easily.
Totally.
But anyway, here we are at the end of an hour, and thank you so very much. I've, as always, thoroughly enjoyed speaking to you and learning more from you and sharing in your wisdom and your experience of life. It's been an absolute treat, so thank you so much. And again, this was Amy Hackett-Jones of the Being Brilliant Radio Show. You can find me at www.amyhackett.jones.com. Thank you all so very much for listening, everybody. Be sure to tune in 2 weeks from now. And in the meantime, go out there and be your brilliant selves. Be the lighthouse. Shine your light, no matter how fierce the storm. Thank you so much. Debbie, we'll connect again soon. Thank you so much for being here.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.